Just basically to give you an idea what we're doing. So we are a little group of spiritual seekers. We had our teachers in India. Most of them already passed away. They were very revered monks and sadhus. And they're part of reviving of Indian spiritual movements. Because in the course of time, India lost not only independence, it's also lost a lot of their spiritual values and treasures. And why it happens, due to, first of all, time. We live in Kali Yuga. This is the cycle of cosmic war. Cosmic winter. So what is Kali Yuga? So according to Vedas, there are four seasons of time. They constantly circulate. So
снимаем активно голову санкашну.
I tried to figure out with the sound.
Okay, so let's set it up the camera, and it's good that you're here, so I can maybe we can even put you on a chair, because if I speak the camera, the people think I'm crazy. I'm talking to you like this. I changed it because I'm on a stool. And the good thing, you can inquire. You can ask questions if you don't understand clearly. So, поставь стул сюда. Господи, очините, поставь стул в центр. Я сказал, посадите гостя, чтобы я смотрел на нее. Okay, you can sit here. A little more further. Okay.
Yes.
Just center the chair a little bit. Sankarsan, center chair a little bit. See this group of people, you always have to tell what to do. They're like... Ну, поставь оба сюда, вот один. Нет, стоп. Один выше, другой ниже, рядом. Мы же можем косо криво снимать. Окей, sounds good. All right.
Сейчас.
So since you're here, there's a divine reason why you're here. So I had a dinner with my lawyer. He's a super wealthy man, Indian man. He wants his daughter to marry some, you know, a prime person in their tribe. And I look at her horoscope, I look at his horoscope, and I said, and I know her daughter, but, you know, I had to tell his parents that she's a very independent woman. She's not a goat. She's not like a goat. You cannot sell her. Mm-hmm. Even the boys, very good family, they're very wealthy. And, you know, because they're Thai traditional Muslim family, I said, I understand that's the way things work in your community, but still you have to respect her freedom. So you think you do pushing, it's not going to work. And I explained to her, I said, well, here's her star, she's very independent, very clever woman, you know. And there's possibility, according to horoscope, these people that match. But I said, not the way of you will, the will of Allah. So... until I start speaking about God's will, he was always like, oh, but, you know, my wife crying, you know, I'm trying. But I said, will of God. Like, there's a will of God, and there's a way that will is manifest. Because he's a very, you know, religious person. And I said, do you want to go against will of God? He said, no. And I said, then you have to respect will of God and respect will of your daughter. So by the divine will, things happen, not by your own, I want this or I want that. It doesn't work like this in this world. So speaking about ancient Vedic knowledge, it's coming from infinity, divinity, the God himself. But foreign people, Western people, understand God as a very limited concept. Remember, this concept of God that had been introduced barely a couple thousand years ago was not really accepted by everybody with love and devotion. It's mainly been spread by fire and sword. So the religion that we have right now, like, for instance, we're Russians. So it was legal Russian law. If you're not accepting the biblical concept of God, you'll be fined, you'll be prosecuted, you'll be jailed. So once I was in, you know, Rome, and I said, oh, it's very beautiful, the square of flowers. I said, yeah, that's where they burn. This guy, what's the guy's name? Giordano Bruno. And I said, this very nice place, but they burned this famous Catholic priest, scientist. And you know why he burned him? Because he started expressing multi-identity of divinity. He said there's multi-universes. There's God does not create one universe. He created many universes. He's eternal. He started explaining common sense ideas about multi, you know, identity of God and multi-universes and infinity divinity. And it sounded pretty amazing. But the guy had been burned just for going outside of his narrative. Because the narrative is meant to control people. It's not really meant for you to be enlightened. Like you went to the school and you say it's amazing. But I will ask you a question. Have you ever studied finances in school? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but every rich kid that comes from rich family, you know what the parents teach? Finances. Mm-hmm. So we, you and I mean, we as Russians been educated to be a slave. American people been educated to be a worker. You know, go get a job. Rich kids been educated to be in charge. That's the difference. So going back to original idea, so why is that so? Why is that we live in the world the way it is right now? Because there's cosmic time divided for four seasons. So number one season is Sati Yuga. That time is very long. Each season has four times shorter. So we live in shorter cosmic season, 400,000 years. So if you multiply this by four, the Sati Yuga, the summer, as a season, cosmic season, stays 1,200,000 years. And at that time, people live longer, they're bigger in size, and they don't need any social community rules such as government, borders, etc. They're already born as realized beings. They don't have to do any job to survive. You know, they live with nature, you know, by the nature. It's not a big population of people. They don't stay in the North Pole. They stay in a nice climate, and they're already born with mystic powers and psychic powers, and you know, they're very beautiful beings. But when that cosmic time starts finishing, the season starts finishing, a transition to another season, which people live shorter time, they're smaller in their bodies, their mindset is different, therefore they start need to build community. They still, you know, live in pretty beautiful environment, worse than their ancestors, but better than us. It means they still connect with nature. They still have spiritual reality perception. They perceive things not from material reality, from spiritual point of view. And they have need for, you know, public community and spiritual life. So the previously Sati Yuga, people get together, but they don't have to get together. They, you know, somebody can just go in the forest and the mountain and just be on his own, you know, and they're not feeling any shortage of inner peace. And of course they meet, you know, it's like the social people always socialize, but in the next age, so socialization become more prominent, more important. And that's age called Dwapara. So in that age, people do alchemical sacrifices. Not the sacrifice from Bible. It means fire sacrifice, the element of fire, and through element of fire, they do different tantric, mystical things where they connect with divine planes, the super planes of consciousness, gods and goddesses, sages. Basically, they're communicating and they're conducting certain mystical rituals, which has nothing to do with the rituals that people do right now. They also do something with fire, they also do, but they have no idea what they're doing. They're not connected on subtle internet level, subconscious plane. They're not multidimensional beings. Right now we live in one dimension. We live like a blind people. We cannot see ghosts, gods, goddesses, spirits of the forest. You know, they're like multidimensional reality. Like we can't talk to plants, we can't talk to animals. because, you know, and animals talk and they communicate. We can't even conceive this because that's how brainless we are at the moment. And we think we're so great. So the next age comes, even four times shorter, it's called Treta Yuga. That's where you have the kingdoms and the kings, social system, the cities and borders. Because in previous age, the borders begin to grow. Because people say, well, one year if you one global world, that was already. And according ancient scriptures, there were the rules of the earth. There were rulers that completely ruled the earth. Very advanced technological, mystical technology, not technology that we're using. Technology that we're using actually came from low planetary systems, but that's another explanation. So, but there's still, you know, there are borders, there are wars. It's already like society is already kind of separating. Why? Because the evil now already not just living, like evil can be even in one family. So the brothers, the kings, they're fighting. They're like, you know, there's like self-interest and competitive spirit, negative competitive spirit. So we get into the threat to Yuga, age of the kings. And what they do, they build big, huge temples. So all these Indian huge temples, they actually built 5,000 years ago and they rebuilt again. Because that's the what is humanity received from previous ages. Yes, there are still sacrifices, but nobody understands. Nobody has that vibe, metaphysical vision on how this whole thing working. But they just follow, you know, follow the ritual. Still, there's some energy there. So the building temples, if you saw Indian temples, they're all full of sacred geometry, the energetic things, but already like the modern people don't even get it what it is. And that Treta Yuga end up with a huge world war. So like we know First World War, Second World War, but it's not really World War. You know, it happens Soviet Union, Europe, not the World War. So when we're talking about Age of Treta, the Mahabharata, it's end up by global war. But at that time, global war does not mean we all gonna kill, you know, villagers and, you know, civil people, and that's what would be the world war. No, we're not going to build concentration camps. That's an invention of our time and the future. So at that time, world war means the kings had an allies, you know, like union of this kind of kings, union of that kind of kings. And finally, that's union of kings fight for leadership. So it means many countries putting together armies, joining the clans. And that war happens in Kurukshetra. It's near New Delhi. And still they're mining swords and spears. So I was just recently in Udaipur, Rajasthan, and I went to one shop, to one guy who has an antique shop. And I said, hey, you have beautiful things. I start pointing certain, he has a lot of weapons. I start pointing. He said, oh, you understand about that? I said, yeah. I said, not only understand, I know how to use them. He said, really? I said, yes, I shoot the bow. And I explained him how this all worked. He was like shocked. And then I said, do you have any like ancient weapons till Mahabharata at the time? He said, yes, I have them. I said, have you like sold any of them? He said, very few. And he showed me some bronze spears from the, like show me like number of really ancient, it was not metal, it was bronze. But I would say kind of mystical bronze because they're very tough. They're not just soft and heavy. So I identify them as something very old. And I said, where is stuff coming from? Because he has, you know, people digging and they're bringing him stuff. He said, yeah, this stuff came from Kurukshetra. And I saw some, you know, previous videos that still in Kurukshetra, where this huge war happens, they're still mining a lot of weapons, like pieces of weapons, because there were like so many warriors dead, literally a few million people. And for the ancient world, few million people is a lot, because it was not as populated as now.
So this end of that world of Treta Yuga happens by this global war, presence of Krishna. Krishna was there at that time. He was at that war. And he said, I will not fight. I will always give advice to the good guy, but I will not fight. Because everybody else trying, okay, you fight with us. In fact, Krishna said, here's my rule. I have a huge army for myself as a consultant. I don't come with my army. If somebody wants me as a consultant, I am alone. If somebody wants my army, that comes without. Of course, the enemy guy said, oh, we need the army, because the army was huge. And Krishna said to them, yeah, you should join that thing and die for their clan. So Krishna knew they're all going to die. And why? Because the Krishna understood after his presence on earth, there'll be huge transformation and new time will take over. And, you know, remember after how the world is rebuilt, remade, a new age come after, normally after huge catastrophe, just like World War I, the world become changed, World War II, the picture of the world change, etc. So now we're in face of World War III. Most people don't understand that, but that's inescapable. So in the next 5 years, you see a completely different world. Whether you like it or not, I'm sure you'll not like it fully, but you'll see the different world. And that world you live in, you're born in, you're like celebrating your last days. Honestly, whether you smile or not, it's already happened. It's just a question of time. But so in every time, millennium, there's a particular cycles. So right now we're ending one cycle and the new cycle will begin. So when I say the world you'll see is going to be changed, not just because it's become a digital. It's the digital people, technocrats, they're thinking, oh, they're going to digitize everybody. And they will at a certain point. That's not what the world will be like. So the Bible say here, end of the times. But the Vedas explain, no, it's not the end of the times. It's one end of a particular, it's the end of a particular cycle of civilization. Yes, possibly people will be depopulated in 80% or 70%. But what comes next will be way more better for short time, only 10,000 years. And after that, there will be another cycle, etc. So we live in a cycle of 5,000 years, actually 4,000-year cycle. Why? Because when Krishna left this earth, he said, "Why? Because my promise, I'm promising you, there's so many sages here. By having all these amazing people, after my departure, 1,000 years will be time that Kali Yuga, this last winter cosmic age, will not take over. But after 1,000 years, when all these great souls will depart, there'll be dark ages." And again, she said, there'll be dark ages, but they will end up by, you know, civilizational destruction. And, you know, after dark ages, there'll be raised up again and again, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a cycle thing. So in the Vedas, we don't review time as something linear. Kala chakra, it's something circulating. It's like spring, autumn, winter, summer. It's a circulating process. So good times, bad times, again, good times, bad times. It's never like bad times forever or the good times forever. It's all cyclical. And that's how we understand the time and history from perspective of Vedas and as well as religion. So we don't say, oh, religion is very primitive. We say at certain part it becomes very primitive. It becomes almost useless. But then in the course of time it gets revived by the great sages, the great personalities, like let's say like Buddha. Remember, Buddha is coming to revive compassion. Why? Because at that time, in that cycle, already Vedic religion degraded. Remember, we spoke about sacrifices. So ancient sages and yogis, they would do sacrifices of animal. Let's say they would take an animal, let's say horse, and they say, by sacrificing physical body of that animal, we will build, settle human body for that being. That's how from a particular animal you can jump to the human. But that's like a mystical power of the sages. And of course, when such sages were no longer available, just the brahmanas who born in a family, let's say, you're not an Einstein, you're born in an Einstein family, but you're not really educated. So those people start doing animal sacrifices, and they would distribute meat as a prasadam. And in fact, a lot of people start eating meat under preface of sacrificial prasadam. Because in other times, the killing animal is forbidden. Certain animals was always eaten in all the times, certain animals. And by certain group of people, like Kshatriyas, the warriors, they were allowed to eat meat that they hunt. And there would never be a kill cow or... So the animals that would live in a human society were not meant to be killed. Only the wild animals and specific group of animals would be allowed by Vedas to be killed to a specific group of people. So there would be like, let's say the world would be like, you know, maybe 90% vegetarian. So right now it's opposite. So the time that we live in is called Kali Yuga, the dark age. And everybody's proud of technology, but it just made people dependent on technology, just made people slaves of technology. In fact, this very technology is coming from low planetary system because it's on liquid crystals. So liquid crystals are perfectly used by nagas, low planetary system. So remember that universe are called the Vedas is multidimensional. And it has many frequencies and vibrations. So it has higher frequencies, such as Burbhuvasva, Mahajata, Tapaloka, where higher beings living, and there's low frequency beings. It does not mean they're primitive, they're just low frequency beings, like Nagas, the reptilians, the demonic races. So they're very advanced, but they're low frequency beings. Like if you really go to this world, you meet people and you judge them by their, you know, vibe and frequency, and you say, oh yeah, this is very wealthy, they're very educated, but kind of a dark people. Oh, these people are very simple hearted, they're not, you know, sophisticated, but I can feel the vibe, I can feel vibration, I can feel, you know, the good energy from them. So that means it's not about intellectualism, it's just you, like, what's your frequency, what's your like inner self, what are you made from? And recently I saw in Instagram quite amazing experiment when they say they just frozen light. They frozen light. They made light heart a special, you know, whatever container. Somehow they did it. So, and they just proclaim that matter comes from light and sound, which in Vedas or even Bible, it says it was sound in the beginning. So remember, sound is a particular vibration, light is a particular vibration. But they realize, as modern scientists realize, how light can be turned into the matter. And that's like recent discovery. And of course, you know, that may not be, you know, at a particular condition, but what it means really, so that vibration theory of universe, that universe frequencies vibration, that's what Tesla explained to people. Oh, how you get the free energy? Oh, there's a plane of energy, it's a different frequency. Once you achieve this plane of energy, like there's endless energy, like a sun, wind, water, fire, it's all there. But you have to get and be able to extract it from that level. That's the ancient technology of energy. It's not about carbon, you know, and wood, etc. But on a low level, that's been used, but not on the highest level. So that's why it's very difficult for modern people to understand. So we live in middle plane, middle plane. People also say Midgard, because a lot of these mystical books, Lord of the Rings and other books, you know, Game of Thrones, it's not something untrue. It's the true that explained to you in the mythology. And you don't really understand that world. What if I took you from, you know, United States, California, 150 years ago, to modern concept of LA? You will not get it. You'd be riding a horse looking for gold. Like if somebody tell you, you know, that piece of land costs $1 million here. You say $1 million? I can buy a whole California in $1 million, dude. Like, let's go digging gold. Because that time people were completely different because, you know, they want better horses. You know, if you tell them like, hey, I'm going to give you a car. What the hell? You know, what the hell the car is? Like, hey, I give you like escalator. This is wow. How does it work? It's mystic. So think of this like 100 years different. And I'll tell you even more, very example. Like, let's say, if I would tell you 5 years ago about ChatGPT, would you believe me?
Yeah.
How would you believe me?
Star Trek has a lot of weird stuff.
Well, you would tell me it's kind of a sci-fi. You wouldn't believe me until you see it and experience it. Like, you know, 30 years ago, you wouldn't believe in internet. You know, 40 years ago, you wouldn't believe in computer. You'd say, it's not really something that I need. Like, why do I need a computer? Oh, you're talking about mobile phone? It's a good idea. Why do I need a mobile phone? And nowadays, you can't even live without mobile phone. In the future, your mobile phone will be in your ass, and you can't get rid of it. I'm just giving you an example that things are changing, and so it's just about perception. So there are some people visionary, they live for the future. Some people can't do it, you know. Some people can't even accept, you know, simple, ordinary things. So you're dealing with number of different type of people that has completely different mindset and vision and perception of reality and time and what the world look like, what, you know, what the world is a system, how is it functioning, you know. A lot of people sincerely believe TV, newspapers, you know. They're getting their information from Joe Rogan, Tucker Carlson. And they think that's what it is, or, you know, even worse. They, you know, somewhere in Africa, they're watching, you know, Mr. Zulu Baba Mama Shmaba, and, you know, he's telling that his own, the narrative of reality. But in a Vedic world, what really is important is what the truth is. And that's what the most important, whether you can understand the truth or not, the truth, that's what important. And truth comes from divinity. And that's why I've said to the friend of my lawyer, yeah, you want some good things for your daughter, for sure, but you have to understand there's the will of Allah. I just explained his level. You know, I was like, will of God, like, do you want to break will of God? Because I know he's like religious guy. He said, no. I said, then you have to wake. But you know why God gives you a daughter independent mind? Look at her horoscope. She's very smart. She's very independent. She's not stupid. Why Allah give her this? Somebody else would be so happy and somebody make choice for you, you know? People love somebody choosing for them. Choose food, you know, even husband. In India, it's a very common thing. The girl, she wants to get married. She's like, hey, my mother, she didn't understand more better about family life. That's how they do. It doesn't mean they force you, but, you know, the mother say, hey, you know, what's the good boy around? Then you don't have to date. You don't have to go to bar and, you know, dress half naked. You know, they search somebody, look his horoscope, they look background. That's how Indian, even in California, they marry like that. They don't marry out of the nightclub, you know, or strip club. They look, what's the good match, what's his horoscope? Okay, he's working Silicon Valley as a manager. She's a, you know, doctor, you know, that'll be good match. Okay, look at horoscope. And then they, you know, meet the couple and say, hey, hang out, there's, so ask my friend Dr. Kumar. I said, how do you meet your wife? He said, oh, it was my mother arranged her with her mother. I said, was it good? I said, yes. Yeah, we met, we talk, we found a lot of common sense. I said, what was next? I said, yeah, we met a few times and, you know, deeper talk about, you know, what we, how we see our future, etc. And, you know, pretty much got a partnership and, you know, they're still married and kids. So if you would perceive this from point of Western thing, you say, oh, it's wild, it's crazy. But actually, it's not. It's like better than anything else, where people, you know, that's how rich elite marry. You know, they don't do things the way common people do. You know, they measure the capital of family and they see the power and blah blah blah, and the kings, of course, because it's the interests of, you know, kingdom and the future. So we're not at a dating party today, I hope, but. What we discuss is we discuss perception of reality. Different people, they realize, conceive things in different way. And the way we conceive reality with certain cliché, those cliché just came from like directly from like TV or the school. And everybody knows the school education as well as propaganda of TV is completely horrible. Like for instance, everybody about talk about global warming, but why they're not talking about like natural medicine? Like, you know, you would be talking about like natural medicine, let's go natural, like, you know, no, in fact, what they do is like mRNA and chemo, like you should eat like, right? Or they're talking about carbon footprint, etc. But in the beginning, of 100 years ago, they already had electric vehicles, which they bound because there's no money. Selling gasoline is way more profitable. The car might be cheap, but the gasoline is good. So all these things, you would appear that, hey, people tell me things just because they speak the truth. Actually, it's not. And if you say, well, the whole nation can be deluded, can be or not. Yeah, like Soviet Union, completely bullshit, or North Korea, completely bullshit. United States, let's make America great again. It's completely bullshit. So it doesn't really matter. Like you really understand the templates of Hitler or other people. They're just using the same brainwash, again, just putting different labels and things. And that means a propaganda will always exist. Like in a book, one of the book I'm writing, I hope you'll read it sometimes. It's quite an interesting book. It's called The Daughter of the Sky. It's about a Chinese princess that went to the south and become a queen. Believe me, you don't want to be her. When you read her life, I mean, in a way you cry, but you'll see like how much she transformed by going to so much trouble in her life, and she's a queen. So in that very book, you know, this woman, she's in war with her neighbors, and she's making very tough stuff because they killed her husband. So she had to like play hardcore game. Like after they kill her husband, they say, hey, we don't know who killed her, but you have to choose one of us. And local kings, and they say, yeah, I will definitely choose one of you, but I want to see your strength. So she's making them like a little coliseum, where first they kill each other, you know, because they're getting more and more. It begins like a fun, but the day, let's say day five, these guys start like hating each other. So their fight already no longer something symbolic, to start competing real deal. And she's endorsing them, of course, because they kill her husband that she loves. But she doesn't tell that, you know, she's a smart woman. So in the end, one last guy is like, remain strong. And he say, I'm the winner. She said, yeah, for sure, but you didn't win me. And the guy does not understand. She's a hardcore fighter. And she has two art. One is the archery, and one is the sword. And she learned sword from the Zen painting. That means her sword, the Chinese sword, is like, you know, it's like in French, because that's about short movement and pierce. So she's not going to play games with you. She's not going to like do muscles. She just cut your throat. So when the guy, she's telling him, yeah, because you guys killed my husband. You want me, that's the price you pay. So hardcore woman with hardcore decision, even against her, there's propaganda. They try to destroy her with propaganda. And there's a warfare, economical, psychological, spiritual propaganda. So we always live in a world of, you know, tension and resistance and the way you have to go your way. So, you know, if you want to watch pimples on your ass and watching TV, you're not going anywhere. Unless it's our program. So you have to, whether you live in best times or whether you live in worst times, these are the best times for you to transform. So the idea is not about times. It's the idea about people living in these times and a few fortunate souls that willing to willing to go by the path of transformation, transcend their identity, transcend the world around them, realize what they are, who they are, why they live in a world of exploitation, why do they live in a world of BS, why? And for that, you can't do it on your own. I wish you could. No, you can't. Well, when people tell you, oh, you should become independent thinkers, you have to learn how to love yourself. These are just slogans. Like when you go to medical school, nobody tell you, oh, you know what, being a neurosurgeon is a very intuitive thing. You have to be born for that. Nobody tells you. No, they tell you there's art and craft. Number one, physiology. Number two, your skills. Number three, your practice. And then you are the neurosurgeon. Why? Because you've learned art, craft, theory, everything. Or when you go drive, nobody tell you, oh, you're an intuitive driver. Just close your eyes, you know, pull over and just like go to highway. And you don't like this side, go to that, the other side. Don't work like this. Everything is really make you intuitive driver, the perfect musician, the perfect driver, the perfect expert. It builds you step by step until this intuitive flow of your heart wake up within you, and then you can improvise guitar, you can do, you know, almost intuitive operation because, you know, big doctor, or you're like a good driver, you go with the flow because you're into that, you connect, consciously connect that. So that's why we call Krishna consciousness. So what is Krishna consciousness? Is to consciously connect with your own self, inner flow of divinity, going towards divine goals, divine love, divine prospects in real way, not in your imaginary way. Remember, people think, oh, meditation is imagination. Or meditation is about stop thinking, but it's not what meditation is. It's connection with reality, which is higher than you, infinitely higher than you. That you can't connect on your frequency and vibration. You almost have to unplug yourself to be able to be plugged in onto some higher plane of reality. So think of this. So if you want to meditate, you should unplug yourself completely, your mind, your senses, your thoughts, because it's like mobile phone. If you really want to talk to me, turn off your mobile phone, right? Why? Because you can't just receive, conceive conceptual information being observed in your mobile phone. You need to switch your consciousness to self. That's why in yoga, you have to switch your consciousness to inner self. And in bhakti yoga, you have to switch your consciousness from your inner self into the supreme self. Supreme self is God, and you're part of him. He's not part of you. You're part of him. So first you get to your own self, where the soul is, then you connect to supreme self, but supreme self is not you, like in so many cells in your body. They're part of you, but but you are not them. Do you understand? It's very important to understand. Like, for instance, potentially every man has in his sperm billions of children. Potentially. But they're not him. They're not me. They're in me. They're part of me. They produce by my body, but they're not me. But I'm them. So there's God, Krishna, who is producing billions of souls. But we are from him. We have equal quality, immortality, bliss, and potential. But we're not him. We can't replace God. But we are irreplaceable part of God. He can replace us. We cannot replace him ourselves. So this is an important thing to understand. If someone does not understand his intrinsic spiritual position, such as being part of Supreme Reality, but not Supreme Reality complete, it's just like giving another example. My finger, what it's meant for? What is it my finger meant for? I thought it's like excellent machine to pick my nose, which I do, or like scratch parts of my body. Oh, feels good. But what if during my talk, my hands start going old and like my fingers start like doing things? And everybody say, well, he sounds like a crazy person. He can't even control his hand or his finger. So my finger, it's part of me when it's connect with me. Connect with my consciousness by my purpose. Then it's become perfect tool. Even if I need to scratch myself, I have to give him command to do it. So I'm commanding my hands. I'm commanding myself. If I can. But I want to ask you a sincere question, only sincere. Are you willing to like, are you willing to answer sincerely?
Sure.
I'll never say sure. How many times in your life you do things out of your emotion rather control by yourself?
Times, I'm sure. Yeah.
Well, give me a percentage.
I don't know.
Well, for instance, you say most of my decision to buy as women emotional. I just like the clothes I buy it. It's emotional. Sometimes I look at the price, but main my buying is emotional. Somebody can say, I never buy my clothes as emotional. That's normally man. I buy my clothes out of practical because I need to work in clothes because I work in this clothes. I look at how many pockets is there. You know, what's is that strong material or something like that? So what we can say is a lot of things that we do are not from coming from common sense. And it's not bad. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying is sometimes, let's say, when you go to observe art or music, it's totally emotional. There's nothing wrong with that. But a lot of times in our life, when we do things, we're not making an emotional decision. I mean, we do make emotional decision where this decision is not need to be emotional. Especially when it comes to dealing with our business partners or, you know, our relationships or our family or our job or so many things. Like at least myself, I realize I burn so many bridges because of my emotion. I build so many bridges because of my emotion and my common sense, but I burn so many bridges because of my emotion. So that means we're not really being under control of our highest self, which is that independent hand that's trying to scroll, you know, like steal something and put it in a pocket in the supermarket and say, hey, what are you doing? Come on, you can't steal things. Why? I like that. You don't have the money to buy because the money belongs to me. You're just my hand. Well, if I'm your hand, that means all the money, all your money is mine. And I'm not stealing. Well, I can't afford to pay for this crap. You know, like, so then you're talking to your hand. And then finally, the manager of the store 9/11, please bring ambulance here. And all you're doing is just trying to negotiate with yourself, with your common sense. And so making a joke, but really that's the perspective, what reality, how we understand reality. So, but if we go non-emotional stage without ego, like I know, then we can say like, how much information from your school you really help you? Just give me a percentage.
Probably not a lot. I don't know.
It was in Soviet Union school. 90% was lie. Education was better than in America. Like education. I haven't used any of it. Almost any of it. Even physical exercise, I hate it. I got much better outside. So I would say, yeah, I loved literature, but I hate literature in school. I loved history. It's probably one thing I love, history of ancient world. But I didn't really like the modern history. It didn't give me any inspiration. So I would say, you know, 90% of my education was waste of my best time in my life, 7 years old till like, you know, whatever, 14, 15. Like your best learning time, you waste completely. Then you go to the next level, and then you go into the level of survival. So you really don't have any education. And of course, there are a lot of smart people. They've learned a lot of stuff, but I would say even those smart people, the only way they can justify it being a great educational system, like Harvard or Yale, you meet people, the elite kids that going to the work for the corporations or governments, or, and you know, you're part of the label, because they look, oh, you graduate Harvard, you graduate Yale, oh, you know this guy, oh, you know that guy, okay. That's like, it's the education that creates your community and your connections in your life. Yeah, and for that reason, yeah, I can say, yeah, those few schools in the world, they do educate better. You know, business or politics, etc. Okay, so why do we complain about life? Why do we complain about education? Who's guilty? The government, father, mother, the system, the state, the country? No. It's circumstance that meant to help you to transform, accept it or reject it. It does not mean that you always have to reject it. You also have to accept it. And maybe using that as a collateral for your next move. And reject something and get it deeper and deeper and deeper. So we can't blame environment. If environment is bad, it's good for us, because environment pushes us to inner self. And environment is good. Sometimes it's also good for us, because it allows us to do things that we want. So the core principle of real spiritual life is association. And in any field of knowledge, experience, association is always something that allow you to grow with somebody else's experience and to get your own. Because we are conscious beings, we're reflecting things. And when we exchange thoughts, we're directing them towards particular, you know, field of knowledge, or the field of experience. And that's why people love storytelling. You know, that's why I'll start writing books. You know, I was a good storyteller, as you can see, but in just age 55, I said, hey, you know, with ChatGPT, I can just write books. It's not writing it for me. I'm writing it, but it's a great tool where, you know, I immediately get things done. So in a couple of weeks, I can write a big fat book. Why? Because I collect the knowledge. See, my books is not just like superficial things. So sometimes I ask GPT, what do you think about my book? You say, well, it's definitely better than Carlos Castaneda and Deeper than Hermann Hesse. I say, well, that's good. You are really flattering my ego, but tell me how to make this book as a bestseller. You know, is that understandable to common people or not? Yeah, because you can write a great book, but is it understandable to common people? But see, my principle in writing book, just like I told you about this queen, and then show you like one little story of this queen, how she deal with, she get things a lot worse. But, you know, in her team, there were a few amazing people that she with. And at her journey, they all die one by one. And some of them not just going to heaven. Some of them, you know, go towards, like, for instance, one guy called like General G or whatever. When he's dying at trying to defeat her life in Tibet, because they have a journey from south to India through Tibet, and a lot of things happen. So he got killed. And before that, he got killed, he got a dream, like mystic dream, that he's going to remain in Tibet as a ghost warrior. And they say, why? And they tell him, a mystical dream, because you've been, all your life, you've been a warrior, you killed a lot of people, so you have to, as a ghost, you have to serve that karma. But you'll be like the ghost, you know, the keeper of monastery, like the, like, you're not just be ordinary ghost, you'll have like a service. But after serving 1,000 years, he'll be reborn again and become, you know, enlightened being. And, you know, he's accepting this. Like, everybody accept, like, acceptance. See, because it's like, oh, I don't want to die, or I don't want to be a ghost. Who cares? Like, you meant, things meant to happen to you, whether good or bad, meant to happen for your transformation. And it may not happen tomorrow. That's why I explained to this friend of mine, yeah, your daughter, eventually, she's a smart, I mean, I know her personally, she's an amazing person. I said, she's smart, she just want to be an independent woman. She wants to make a choices, you know, she wants to choose. You don't have to buy a car for her, let her choose it. She'll do better choice. You don't have to get a husband for her. You can introduce, but, you know, she might get better choice, or it's her choice, not your choice. What if you made a choice and she'll be like frustrated and unhappy? Then you, until you die, you'll be blaming yourself. So you help the people, but choice is there. And that's why I told her this will of Allah, because Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, he asked Arjuna, he said, do you really like that knowledge? And Arjuna said, yes, it's amazing. And Krishna said, now choose in spiritual evolution where your position is and act based on your real position and build your own plan for your upliftment. Have you ever heard this from any other divine scripture? No, of course. It's always be forced to you, you know, the guys, you know, 2 years ago dead for your sins, and now you have to pay the bill. It's almost like Donald Trump told Ukraine, I actually help you. I'm like, thank you. But it was not for free. Oh, really? Yeah, you have to pay it 10 times. Give me all your initial resources. So that means you didn't really help me. You made a sale, like you send me merchandise, now you're trying to charge me 10 times. It's kind of a scam. Do you understand? Like in a lot of religion, it's like this. They send you that post bill that you have to pay, and you're obligated. And you're like, do I really have to accept this idea? Oh, yeah, because you're born like this. Also, that means if I'm born stupid or poor, you know, I can't change my position. Can I change my religion for better? Or can I become a better Christian? Or can I become better Krishna? Whatever. So the freedom of the soul is the most important freedom, not because we're free, we're actually slaves, but to accept inner things. Things for transformation is your only real free choice. Because sometimes you're limited. Coca-Cola or Sprite. Thank you, I don't drink soda. Oh, French fries or chicken fries. No, I'm sorry. I stay no food. That's my choice. So that is life. So our choice not always unlimited. It's limited, but our inner choice, that's what's the most important. So in this case, we had an intense conversation with our guests. I want to thank you for being a role model. You've been very attentive. It's good. You're a good listener. Sometimes you even accept things and wave your head. That's good. And do you have any questions? Or anybody has any questions? Oh, by the way, you win a cup of herbal tea. Not ATHI. Any questions? Questions, comments?
Well, how do you know this is the right way? You said the other religions aren't right. So why is this the
right? Right. I'm saying the choice of your evolution is the free will of soul. If any religion push you for any good thing, and you are not consciously accepting this, that's not your choice. It's somebody else's choice. Just like I explained to a friend of mine about his marriage with his daughter, it has to be her choice because this is her marriage.
Why did you choose this?
Well, because it's important impact on your own personal life. And by accepting something, you're also accepting suffering that possibly comes to you. You're accepting difficulties that possibly comes to you because that's necessarily for your transformation. That's why, you know, what God gives you is a free will. So one time I saw a bunch of Muslims and they said, oh, we hate this kind of people, that kind of people, you know, BLM people. I said, yeah, I understandable. You may not follow the tradition, but my question was like, why Allah, Almighty God, create them? So my question to you, why Almighty God create something imperfect? So for you to hate? Or can you change people? Can you make them saints? Can you make somebody's advance? Can you make somebody change their habits? And you say, you can't really do it. You can help people. But let's say even I'm going and I'm coming for a meeting and you're listening to me and you're helping me by listening to me. But that's my willing choice to come to a meeting to admit that I want to give up, you know, addictions, drugs, etc. So it's my willing meeting. If I force you for that meeting, you know, by force, I don't want to hear anybody. I don't want to talk to anyone. Nothing's going to happen. Number one. Number two, all those religions demand for a certain group of people. I do realize that most people don't understand good art, good things, good literature, good music. That's why we have mediocre class. And it's big, it's called mass market. And it's not about price, it's ability to identify what's good. That's why when you go to study art, because I do work as all my life, I work as an arts producer and artist myself. And I explained to one of our girls, she told me like, how you know this? I said, because when I was 23 years old in New York, I had 25 artists work in my studio. And by the time, you know, I was 25, I had all complete art production with like big guys. I've learned from professors, but I was manager. I've learned how to manage artists or to provide them the best way to express themselves. And that's an important thing. Environment where you can express yourself, to create an environment where you can express your inner self, when you can be the most creative, the most amazing, most productive, not the most lazy artist or self-centered artists or ego artists. So how do you make this magic? How you create this environment? This is very important. And that's part of creative process. So when you, you know, go to history of art or art world, you realize a lot of art is done just by ego, and you know, it's actually false because it's meant to flatter empty people. It's very popular. So when people ask me, Swami, what's this art is all about? I call it brain fucker. It just stimulates your brain. You know, it's a brain fucker art. It's not really has anything inside. It's just stimulation. A lot of it, and mostly it's a lot of it. Like, you know, people say, oh, why you made some scar? Why you work with Andrew Jones? I said, because he's a true artist. See, he worked, died the clinical death. He worked in a production artist. Like, I know what he done. I know his hand sketches, and he's become like a digital guy. And like, you know, came out of festival world. I'm not 100% revere all his art. But as an artist, he's an original. Because he's got something real, not everything. Like, he doesn't understand his own art. It's very normal for artists to not understand what he's emotionally represent. It's just like musician, you know, you play music and some people cry. And you can't explain why. Why this, you know, you just know that vibe. Remember we spoke about vibration. It's all about vibe. It's more subtle than just the objective reality. So it's not about your mental inquiry, it's about your inner mental inquiry. It's called subconscious reflection. That's how you understand the truth. Your mind may not be pure, but your heart may be pure. So sometimes you touch somebody's heart, not their mind. Their mind can be completely messed up. Remember, mind is a very difficult thing. So one of my book called Mind Kampf, not My Kampf. My Kampf is a Hitler book, but I wrote a book called Mind Kampf. But I stopped writing that book because I thought if I want to write that book, I just want to go very deep into the mind. Like I'm not prepared. This flow is not coming to me. But when it comes, I'll write very quick. The idea is very good. But I thought, if I just write straight truth, very few people can read it. So I have to have a nice story, the plot, the characters, the conflict of dialogues, because that's when it gets to you. When you start giving the life, life application to something. Not just a bunch of thoughts. When you put all these mental models in a story. Let's say you got a bunch of historical politicians, they meet together, Lenin, Stalin, Roosevelt, you know, Lincoln, Alexander the Great, you know, and they start speaking. And like, you're showing they're all idiots. But how do you show they're all idiots? Let's say Plato or Aristotle or somebody else coming for that meeting. So they're not talking to you, they're talking to some historical character who are like way more deep. And he will say, well, Alexander the Great, what was your idea?
I really think I want to conquer the whole world, so I run on my horses with my army and like put gun in front of everybody and tell like, you gotta be surrendered to me. Let's make a better world.
But there's a story. If you have a gun, I have a gun, we can talk equal. If you have a gun and I have nothing, you hold in my life, I agree to anything. That's not how you convince people, right? So Alexander the Great conquered the whole half of the ancient world. based on the principle I have a gun and I'm coming with better world idea. Did that become a better world? As illusion, as a dream for some short time, yes. All these things require deep thinking and deep analyzing. And that's why they're good to be in story. Because once you put them in story, things change and you start relating with the story. Do you like to tell stories?
Sometimes.
There's not that many stories to tell. The arc of stories are pretty much repeatable. That's why if you really study storytelling, they will tell you it's not that many stories. But because of unique circumstance, unique character, unique people, it's become almost new every time. But as far as the arc of character, his transformation, his difficulty, his challenges, it's pretty much algorithmic repeatable thing. That's why if you really look at the Hollywood movies, they all pretty much the same. But very few ones where the storytelling become really touch of your heart. There's many great script writers, but why are they writing the whole crap? Do you know why? Should I reveal a secret? Every studio in Hollywood has maybe 200, 300 scripts. And a lot of them really good ones. But the problem is the studios owned by a certain group of people. They decide. Call them whatever you wanted. James Cameron, known, is a very advanced filmmaker. So when he present idea of Titanic, he fell. The group of investors said, oh, we don't like idea of Titanic, who wants the catastrophe? Yeah, it's a famous plot, it's a famous thing. But he said, yes, you're right. I'm not really doing Titanic as a Titanic catastrophe movie. I'm doing Romeo and Julia, the love story that everybody seeks in midst of catastrophe. How many millions you want? Your idea win, why? Because the love story that everybody seeks unfulfilled love. It's very important, very difficult to make in book, movie, but it happens when the world is in catastrophe. That's the genius. Why? Because metaphysically, this world is Titanic. And in reality, you're looking for love that you're not gonna get here. But you'll get it for some time as a concept. That's why until you understand Krishna consciousness, you can't really understand what love is. And I'm not talking about as myself. I'm talking about as the Feast of Plato. There's only one love story book written by Greeks that every great intellectual knows. No one wrote anything stronger than that. A little bit of Shakespeare, but you know, everybody knows it's a Decker. And Abhinava Gupta and Rupa Goswami, that most people don't know. And you know who's Abhinava Gupta? He's a mystic yogi who stays in the caves of Kashmir. He's the teacher, incredible, you know, tantric transformational philosophy. And although being great yogi, one of his other experience as a theatrical artistic books, I mean commentary on the sacred principles of art. So think of this, like the guy should be like totally metaphysic, but he's writing his whole review on principle of emotional drive of heart, which Western people don't even think that can be described. Like, remember that famous story about, in French, it's parfumeur, the serial maniac who produced perfume. Have you seen that movie? It's a famous book. In that book, world drawn by smell. And you can take any kind of beauty, any kind of fragments, and mix. And by giving that smell, people get charmed. And there's one guy who can smell anything and tell you exactly, okay, it's that much lavender mixed with that much mint, add that much orange, and that much camphor. It's just like you, just like remember Mozart, he can listen any music of that time and give you, that's what it is. Not take the notes into the music, take music into the notes. And that's where the art of emotion starts in storytelling. It's a separate story, not today. But this is the most esoteric key for reality. Who has that key has the world. Not the world you think, not the world. Because that's the key to the world of reality. And that's very deep, very mystical thing. So we start writing a book called Alchemy of Love. And I understood, I cannot fully express it right now. And if I cannot fully express it on a deep level, I don't want to work with that. And then in my meditation, few answers came to me. Study that, and you will understand. And I thought, why is that? And when I study, I understood. Because that has two parts, one spiritual and one material, both connected. I knew the spiritual part, but the material I did not know. So that material part came to me and said, only by understanding how this two reality works in different planes of consciousness, remember multidimensional reality, you can really understand what love is. Like, how is that love translates in this girl? Love of flowers or love of man? Why does women, every woman dream to marry, she doesn't want to marry this guy? What's wrong with that? Which emotion being touched? It's like guitar, what's the string, you know, what's the vibration? That's another story. So I want to thank everybody for being today, and I want to thank you for being with us, and maybe by your presence some inner things came up, which is normally happening, because when we have conversation with somebody, we should look at someone we have conversation with as a mirror. Mirror does not mean everything we think is truth. No, it means mirror, means like quantum mirror, a transformational mirror, mystical mirror, which is another story. You know, there's mystical mirrors. Recently, I've learned a lot about them. That's another story. Hare Krishna. Okay. So should we chant a little bit to like go down to our different vibe? You don't have a mridanga? We can sit here. You can sit here if you feel. We're going to chant together a little bit. Yeah, you can sit in your. By the way, thank you for being with us. Any other cartels? Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Chaitanya Gadadhar Sarva Sadhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Today, and I want to thank everybody to being here tonight. Sorry, a little late from our lawyer's dinner when I had to speak with him about so many amazing things which he couldn't accept.